Welcome back to the Roundtables live broadcast from the press porch at Tanglewood, outfitted with a baby grand piano, beautiful views of the Highwood Manor Gardens, wicker, and lots of pastries. Good morning, I'm Joe Donahue.
And I'm Alan Jardock. We're surrounded by beauty with the Stockbridge Bowl, the Koussevitzky Music Shed, and Azawa Hall, all just steps away. It's the perfect setting, Joe, for a 180-minute Berkshire celebration.
And we begin it now. Tech guru Adam Claremont is our on-the-scene engineer, joined by Jessica O'Rourke. Sarah LaDuke is our producer, and roundtable engineer Dave Hopper is back at home base.
Yep, we start off with an abbreviated roundtable panel and welcome our man from the Columbia paper, editor and publisher Parry Teasdale. Good morning, Parry. Great to have you back with us at Tanglewood.
It's great to be here.
Good to see you, sir. We also welcome back our dear friend Mark Volpe. He's the managing director of the BSO, also known as the Boston Symphony Orchestra, and it's a great pleasure to have Mark with us. Good morning, sir.
It's great to be here. I'm a little bit in shock because the Red Sox just called me and told me they traded me.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they had my rights, but there is a market for 56-year-old pitchers that have, 68, 69-mile-hour fastballs. When I'm loose, it's actually closer to 70 or 71. But
clarinet. We'll can see. We time that? Yeah.
Clarinet players. Clarinet players. You have to move your whole family, Mark, when you're traded. How does your wife take it?
Well, considering this is the fourth orchestra, Alan's referencing my earlier comment before we were on the air that if I mentioned my wife, my wife's last instructions
to the couch, yes.
were you don't talk about me.
You don't talk about me.
Yeah.
I like it.
On the air. Otherwise, she's fine. But on the air, she's a little bit disdainful of that.
So the Red Sox. Well, yeah, what
about
trades.
Them? What about them? What about them, Red Sox?
Well, it's so interesting because I was talking to a gentleman who is about to give another major gift to a smaller orchestra, and his basic passion for
wrong.
Forgive the hubris of this is wrong. One, and two, his notion is because he plays in the sports, major league sports world, that you can buy a few players and make the Boston Symphony. And you can buy three players or acquire three players and win a world championship if you're a basketball team. But the way orchestras work is there's typically an attrition of two or three players per year. And there's a culture that gets passed from generation to generation, from player to player. And so this gestalt of the Boston Symphony is something that gets created over decades. And that's true of all the great orchestras, whether you're talking Berlin or Chicago or any of those great orchestras. It's not something, and these guys in the sports world, and these guys like in the tech world where, they become billionaires in 3 months, that's a notion, they can't grasp.
I'm sorry, Joe.
No, so forgive the flip question, but so how do you not screw that up?
Well, to get into the symphony, and I know you've asked about auditions, there's an enormous process that goes on for five, six months. The players, especially the ones most immediately impacted, if it's a string player, it's mostly a committee of string players or wind players, if it's a wind player or wind vacancy, I should say. And they're intimately involved from the get-go doing all the screening. And there's so much pride in the best sense of the word that they maintain a standard. And there had been a period where typically in the old days, the music director, 30, 40 years ago would decide. And, we've had a whole myriad of auditions where the music director hasn't been involved because Jimmy's obviously been indisposed. Andres now is coming on board. So the players, to their great credit, with a supermajority at the very end, have basically selected their colleagues and reviewed and dealt with probation issues and tenure and all
blind,
that.
And all blind, right?
It's all blind till the very end, typically. And then the screen comes down when they're down to, you start with hundreds and you go down to two players or three players. And then the
curtain comes on the hill. Oh, no, not him.
What have we done?
They might think that. They don't say it.
Is there a metric that you use that you could say, when the Sox are doing well, the orchestra isn't, and when the orchestra is doing well, the Sox aren't, or something like that? Or do you use those external ways of measuring your success?
Well, unlike sports teams that kind of go up and down, the Boston Symphony has been one of the elite orchestras probably for 7, 8, 9, 10 decades, and it does. There are demographic shifts. And you've seen one fairly recently, where the orchestra gets a little younger, but that and there's new blood and that cuts both ways. You know, you lose some of that legacy, you lose some of that information, that culture. At the same time, the younger players, you know, are certainly beyond technically proficient. So there's, like everything else in life, a little bit of a trade-off. That being said, you know, the orchestra maintains a pretty high level throughout. And
it's the best orchestra in the world, you know.
I've been told, by them
and by me.
Well, I wasn't thinking mutual musical success, because obviously that's there. But the question is whether or not the economic success is there. Yeah.
We're by definition a not-for-profit, and we only exist because of the generosity of many, many people here in the Berkshires and beyond. So we're very, very fortunate to have that support. So we're very much driven by a mission, and certainly the players are integral to that mission of performing music at the highest level. And we have an educational dimension that obviously here we have the music center with the young fellows from all over the world, and we have 400 middle school kids from various many disadvantaged backgrounds that we bring here in our darts program, Days in the Arts at Tanglewood, and we have a relationship with BU, and they bring a bunch of high school kids. So we have obviously an artistic mission, we have an educational mission, and frankly, it's not explicitly stated, but as in terms of economic impact, you take Tanglewood out of the Berkshires, and that's a that we're bringing 350,000 people to the Berkshires that are eating at restaurants, staying in Columbia County, some of them having second homes in Columbia County, which is a big center for second homes, and obviously Berkshire County as well. So we have so many dimensions and so many, we have the three brand strategy with the Symphony, Pops, and Tanglewood. So as Alan has indicated, we're the largest scale orchestra in the world in terms of scope of activities, and certainly that starts first and foremost with the musicians of the Boston Symphony.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable how good this orchestra is. I know about these things, One time, I'm told this story one time too many, but one time, Tim Taylor brought Seiji here to this very press porch, and as she sat down with him, she whispered in my ear, "Ask him about the Red Sox." So I asked him about the Red Sox, and his smile, one ear to the other, just started to smile, talked about Terry Francona at the time and how great the Red Sox were and so. And then Clarence Fanto, our wonderful friend, was a little bit upset by this and asked him a very good musical question about the high C in the third movement of the something.
And he started talking about Karl Yastrzemski, right?
No. And he says, yes, very good, very good. And he said, but let me go back to the Red Sox.
He sat in the middle of Suntory Hall, the major hall in Tokyo, with Caroline Kennedy, who I put him next to when we were there just in May with the orchestra, and had a Red Sox hat and a Red Sox practice jersey and a Red Sox jacket, and all these very formal Japanese, and it's a joyous occasion, the Boston Symphony back in Japan, but people tend to be respectful, and they're seiji, and it's so in character.
in full regalia. That's great.
It's like an 8-year-old. You got to love them.
Let's take a break, and we'll be back. We'll continue our conversation. Mark Volpe, Alan Chartok, Perry Teasdale. It is our live broadcast from the press porch at Tanglewood. We'll be back after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York. DavidsonBrothers.com. PS21 Performance Spaces for the 21st Century, Chatham, New York, presenting Lionel Popkin Dance Company, performing Ruth Doesn't Live Here Anymore, tonight and tomorrow night at 8 p.m., ps21chatham.org. And Flynn Audi, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, providing sales, leasing, and servicing of Audis in the Berkshires and surrounding areas, FlynnAudi.com.
We're going to come back, although Mark has figured out that his microphone set can actually be a Rubik's Cube, I think. You get it all in one color, Mark. It's ready to go.
It would be easier if you color-coded this one.
But he puts it on over his head, Joe, unlike James Levine, who had this fancy sort of hairdo, and he put it on, you know, under his chin.
Well, he would hold it. He would hold it, which I think was about his hearing, wasn't
it? No,
that
it was more about it takes a lot to get the hair
going. Well, the hair
do
going
that,
down.
So it's hard to
No, that's what I thought.
So, how are things in Columbia County? What should you tell us about what is going on this summer? Are you handling things well there?
Life in general? Is the paper handling things or is Columbia County handling things? I don't know. I think it's summertime. It's slow sometimes. But then we have always the news, and just we had our senator, Senator Gillibrand, who's been in the news a lot lately. I mean, she's got this new proposal for and it's a bipartisan one. It was just in the paper the other day about making sure that there is a stronger law about sexual abuse in making women safe in college. Yeah. And so that's a big bill, and that's got a lot of attention. But she was in our area recently to talk about jobs and to talk about business and small business, and she had in tow the administrator of the Small Business Administration, and that's going to be important for our region because we've got a lot of small businesses. And it's a small county.
Yeah, and she used to live here, by the way.
And she used to live in Greenport, and so she's a local person. And the thing that was interesting to me was to find that in the Ryan budget that came out earlier this year, there's a cut of over $1 billion over the 10 years of that budget in the Small Business Administration. Mm-hmm. And you see what's going on with small business loans all around. I mean, this is not to Columbia County in specific. It's all over the country. And you say, well, wait a minute. Small businesses are the major employers in the country, not in terms of number of employers. And this is a driver of our economy. Now, why would you want to cut that? Because these are loans. This is not welfare for people, and I don't want to even say that that's a bad thing. I'm just going to say that if you get your money back, what's the risk?
Sure.
And yet there's cuts coming up, and still there's money right now to give away, but to loan to small businesses.
But you know, it goes to an even larger issue, and that is the rift in the Republican Party between the old guard who believe in American business and who want to support it one way or another, and the new folks who are coming in and saying, okay, we're the radical right, and if you don't do what we want, this kind of cutting, we're going to run a primary opponent against you.
Right.
And so they're in a really bad spot. I mean, this is going on. It's ongoing.
Yeah, and across the spectrum of issues, it certainly is not just about small business. It's about immigration. We see that with the stalling of the bill. Maybe they'll get one today, or maybe they won't in the House. I don't know.
Well, apparently, they're having a hard time.
Get in the House, the Senate's gone. So
Senate's gone, right.
It's not pure politics.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's theater. So what are you going to do? But that's, I think, and it's good to see the legislators out there talking about it, because if people aren't aware of it, then it just passes notice, and you get the highest profile things that are going on out there. So we're happy to see that at the level of the U.S. Senate there is some concern about small businesses, and then that needs to be pressed forward, because I don't know, the job numbers were out. I didn't hear them because it was
200,000.
So it's still, we're still on a slight
rise,
a very modest growth path. And if we fool with that, then we're tampering with long-term viability of the nation's economy.
And yet the market yesterday was killer.
Yeah,
I mean, 300 points is a lot of points. And they were reacting to something. And, you know, sometimes good news, you know, anticipated job report or level of the economy rising ends up with the market voting against it because they're afraid of inflation, for example.
Interest rates.
Yeah, that's it. It's more interest rates, and it's that affects the price in the market. And so, therefore, unless you're betting against the market, then you want to see the market go up. And if the market, if interest rates go up, then other vehicles become more attractive to investors. And so it takes money out of the market, and that's not good. So
the people that, you know, try to predict interest rate, you know, I mean, there are a few that do it moderately successfully, but you look at all the various aspects that affects the macro economic situation. Home mortgages, certainly the whole pension area is driven by interest rate environment. So that has so many implications even beyond the stock market that obviously that's why you see people overreact, and we'll see if there's a correction or whatever that means.
Yeah, but I want to know something from you. Do you notice that when the market does something volatile, that it might affect your support from folks out there?
Well, certainly, there are certain activities that are deemed to be worthy of preferential tax treatment, education, medicine, certainly culture, and the tax code creates incentives for giving, not just the charitable deduction, but people can give appreciated securities and avoid the capital gains. And,
sure.
And so when the market is going up, the likelihood of getting larger capital gifts increases. It doesn't so much affect annual giving where people will write a check for $500 or $50 or whatever they're going to do, but if they're going to give a capital gift and endow or help build a building, they're typically using appreciated securities, and just the psychology of it is such that people feel better as the market goes up and more willing to share.
Just for my limited knowledge, Mark, and as you know, it is limited, appreciated securities in this case means that their securities are worth a lot of money and they don't want to pay taxes on them?
Well, let's say you bought a stock for a dollar and went up to $50. Mm-hmm. If you just sold it, you would have $49 in capital gains, and there are capital gains rates that
apply. But you'd still be making money.
You'd still be making money, but for those who are predisposed to share their good fortune, they can. I hope you're in that category, Alan. We'll talk later after we're done here. But they can avoid the full capital gains, and there are various instruments that they can use to actually. I don't want to get into sophisticated planned giving, nor does your audience want me to do that. But ultimately, you can avoid $49 in capital gains if you even give a portion of that to a charity.
Oh, I see your point.
Charity I have in mind is the Boston Symphony, but sure, there are others.
Sure, we find the same thing. And do you find that it's at the end of the year, Mark? That a lot of people make these decisions, although they could make them all year long. There's no rule against that, but that they wait until the end of the fiscal year?
Well, people tend to, the tax year, which is December.
Yeah.
So you see increased giving across the country in December. People, any financial advisor will tell you should be doing your tax planning throughout the year and not wait to December, but human nature being what it is. So that's when people start, making their final decisions as to how to.
Sure.
Well,
that's those of you who have enough money to need to do tax planning other than, oh my gosh, where am I going to hide?
Right. Well, that certainly lets me out.
Well, everybody, whether they have the means to do charitable giving, that's in the tax system should be thinking about taxes,
But, I want to go back to jobs for a second. One of the things is you were talking about the scope of what you do here. How many people are employed right directly through Tanglewood?
Tanglewood, probably overall 700, 800. Through the course of a year, we issue Boston Symphony W-2s probably close to 1,200. So we employ 1,200 people, not all full time.
And that doesn't include the fellows.
The fellows are here with talk about generosity and philanthropy.
Yeah.
They're given free room and board and free tuition for spending 8 weeks with us. So that's all. That doesn't include them, and doesn't include all the students. If you talk about the number of people we reach,
So what does it cost to run a place?
$84 million operating.
Is that just Tanglewood? BSO.
That's the BSO. We don't break out Tanglewood because it's the same marketing staff, the same orchestra.
Sure.
So I would argue it's roughly a third of our budget.
Did you say it's that three-prong?
Yeah, it's a three-prong. Yeah. I would say Tanglewood is probably a third of our budget. So it's, pushing $30 million, maybe in the 20s.
We are out of time, but I do want to thank Perry. Thank you very much. It's really good to see you again. Thank you very much for joining the questions. Thank you so much. And Mark, it's always good to see you. Thank you for being such a gracious host and having us back. I really appreciate it, and have a wonderful remainder of the season.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you. For more information on the stories that Perry has mentioned, you can go to columbiapaper.com. For more information on Tanglewood, go to tanglewood.org. You're listening to The Roundtable Live from Tanglewood on WAMC.